Home Alone 2 is also another dazzling piece. Kevin McAllister has this dialogue with a homeless woman. She says, "Did you know that a good deed can erase a bad deed?" And Kevin says, "I don't know if I'll have enough good deeds to erase all my bad ones."
Wow.
Good news, she says, is that it's Christmas Eve and good deeds count extra tonight. Just follow the star in your heart.
Wow.
And the real Christmas story is, actually, no, follow another star that's going to lead you to an object of Savior,
yeah.
Jesus.
In an actual place called Bethlehem.
Yeah.
5 centuries ago, in taverns and public houses across Europe, the masses would gather for discussion and debate over the latest ideas sweeping the land. From one such meeting place, a small Cambridge inn called the White Horse, the Reformation came to the English-speaking world. Carrying on the tradition, welcome to the White Horse Inn.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the White Horse Inn. As we are taking a look at something that we have never done before, the theology of Christmas movies. So go get some popcorn and sit back. We're going to take a look at what it means to celebrate Christmas these days. No one has to be reminded, really, how secular Europe has become. But when I was living in England, experiencing 3 Christmas times there, I was struck by the contrast with how it's celebrated in America. Santa Claus is a pretty small part of the whole thing. No spin-off myths about reindeer, snowmen, and chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Even nominal Christians showed up for carol services, where there were readings of the prophecies and their New Testament fulfillment, interspersed with songs that were richly and explicitly tied to the Word made flesh. The commercialization and secularization of Christmas in America has been noted for a long time. It's not any great news flash. Christmas, or the holidays, is big business. Often, even in church services, there are spectacles with living Christmas trees and Santa visits. Ironically, many of the most vocal defenders of Merry Christmas in our society are really interested in a civil religion type of ceremony that has very little to do with Jesus. The culture wars don't seem that interested in talking about the incarnation, the actual myth that became fact, the entirely non-sentimental journey of God the Son to the far country in order to seek and to save that which was lost. Well, in this program, we want to look at the theology of Christmas in America, the songs and the movies that are meant to make our spirits bright. And to do that, in the Christmas spirit here with our jingling bells are Justin Holcomb, teaches at Gordon-Conwell Seminary and Reformed Seminary. Justin, as always, great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Whitney Gamble teaches biblical and theological studies at Providence Christian College in Pasadena. Great to have you with us again.
Thanks for having me.
And Adriel Sanchez, pastor of North Park Presbyterian Church in San Diego, California. Adriel, good to have you back.
Thanks, Mike.
Let's take a look at some of these. Throw your own in, but I'll kick off here. Christmas Carol. Charles Dickens, the author, of course, turned into countless theatrical and cinematic versions, including a 2009 animated version featuring the voice talent of Jim Carrey. So let's walk through this a little bit. Does anybody remember the basic plot line of The Christmas Carol?
Well, the story surrounds Ebenezer Scrooge, who's awakened on Christmas Eve by the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, who reveal to him the effects of his miserly ways and the dire fate that awaits him if he fails to change. It's a classic story, and I remember watching the Muppet version growing up, which was a fun movie to watch. But theologically, it really is a train wreck. Ebenezer has been bad, and he's been miserly. He's kept all his money, and he's told to change his ways. And if he changes his ways, he'll find happiness and that's where the story ends, basically.
The problem with him, and he was a mean, greedy, not very pleasant person to be around. And so we're not trying to throw a wrench into your Christmas movie fun. But it's really helpful to actually kind of think through, like, what we are being catechized, we are being shaped. In what way do these things shape us? What picture of the world are these movies giving us? And this picture is giving the problem of humanity is that he's kind of mean and kind of greedy, which is huge. I mean, the Apostle Paul lists greed and some other things, but the problem isn't deep enough. It needs to go a little bit deeper. And because the problem's not deep enough, the solution isn't really that robust and full. It's, well, he needs to amend his ways and learn how to be nicer and share a little bit more and be more pleasant. He has these moments of the three spirits kind of giving him insight. And so the picture here is it's a low view of the problem of humanity. The solution is some more information. He needs to have a little bit broader perspective. He needs to broaden his perspective and see a little bit more than he's seeing right now so he can have some good advice on how to respond and be nicer and, you know, spread some happiness instead of some gloominess. And that kind of theology working in that is Pelagianism. And Pelagianism is a heresy from the early church. Augustine wrote about it, against it, which basically says you have what you need. You don't need anything from outside. You got what you need inside of you. God wouldn't tell you to be good if you couldn't be good, so be good.
For goodness sake.
Nice. Very nice. And that's what you see. It's a feel-good story, but very basic moral reform.
Remember, we're not talking about movies in general that have a moral tale. I can get pretty weepy about all sorts of movies where there is no involvement of grace and reconciliation, forgiveness, and hope from another world.
Are you a movie crier?
I do sometimes.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I can.
I get made fun of by my wife because I'm...
I know, because I don't cry at things that she thinks that I should cry at. But I cry at things that really are stupid.
Yeah, my wife's like, why are you crying at a romantic comedy? I'm like, I don't know. It just touched me. Like, but not like the really good ones? Yeah. Like a romantic comedy, honey? I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Exactly. But what we're saying is these have Christmas in the title. These are movies that are intended to be part of our Christmas celebration. And yet, is it fair to say that as we kind of unpack some of these examples, that all of them are kind of rabbit trails directing us away from what Christmas was actually all about to really all of them being moral tales? They're not gospel tales. They're not announcements of what God has done, rending the heavens to come down and save us. They are stories about people who were bad and they became good, so that Santa finally could give them presents and they could enjoy Christmas.
A line you will hear in almost all of these movies is fill in the blank, and that's what the spirit of Christmas is all about. It's either going to be generosity or self-awareness or deepening your spirituality or maybe not being so prickly about all the specifics about one religion. That's the spirit of Christmas. That spirit of Christmas. So they are trying to communicate what the spirit of Christmas is, and it is noteworthy that Jesus doesn't make much of a showing in many of these. There might be a passing reference, might be some jokes about baby Jesus. They're really funny ones sometimes, but rarely does it have anything to do about the particularity of the God-man, Jesus, and what's happening in an incarnation and his arrival as a baby king.
Yeah. It's almost like we want the morals of Christianity or the Christmas story and the fruit of the Christmas story, the joy, the sense of closeness and family without the actual message of Christmas. So we want all the fruit, but we don't want the cross.
Yeah, and by bringing this up, we're not saying we don't want you to be joyful or happy or hopeful or generous or sharing or any of these wonderful good things. We're not trying to take that part from you. We're just saying that only comes in one way, that comes with Jesus, because what he has done and the fruit of what he has done.
Yeah, the foundation of that has to be the work of Christ. I wonder, too, if like, what is the reason? Why is it that we want to do away with that aspect of the Christmas story? I mean, obviously, you know, like in the New Testament, it talks about the cross being an offense and whatnot. But I think one of the reasons simply is that the cross tells us that we really don't earn any of this or get any credit for the good that comes. Pelagianism, like you mentioned earlier, Justin, says actually we can get the credit because we're doing this on our own. We're pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps and becoming good people and reforming ourselves. And so we get credit. The cross says it's impossible to do that. The cross says you need something way, way bigger that's outside of you. And we don't like to admit that. We would much rather take the credit for the jolly attitudes or whatever it is that we have. Mm-hmm. And so I think that might be one of the reasons why you see this happen time and time again in entertainment and even entertainment that surrounds Christmas.
That's why when I hear people bellyache about Saving Christmas, and good grief, spending so much time and energy saying that they're going to make sure that we can say Merry Christmas in December in public. I just look at that and say, so what do you think about the incarnation? What do you think about the Word made flesh? It's really a cultural heritage, not a religious holiday, right?
Yeah, and almost all of the Christmas movies that I can think of, they're all moralistic, basically saying there is some kind of inherent good in humanity, and it's the Christmas spirit to discover that good.
Yeah.
And if you discover it, well, then you have the Christmas spirit. To me, that is such a rejection of the gospel.
Anti-gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to...
You don't need Jesus.
Yeah. That's basically what the message is here. Yeah. You have what you need in and of yourself and find it. Stop being grumpy. And then you have the Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
What's noteworthy about a lot of these Christmas stories is... they're not just happiness in Christmas songs and presents. There's usually some darkness involved. There, with the Christmas Carol, you have the Scrooge, and he's starving out poor people. And then you have another one with It's a Wonderful Life, 1946. And this is one that, I mean, my mom watches this one every Christmas. Like, that's just part of what she's going to do. Like, she's going to sit down, and it's going to be seen. It's the opposite end of the spectrum of Ebenezer Scrooge. This is a guy who is at the end of his life, and with the help of his guardian angel, Clarence, he's shown all of the good that he's done and what the world would have been like without him. And the arrival of the three spirits with A Christmas Carol kind of threaten him, like, watch out, you're going to be alone. This one is the opposite of Clarence, which is, hey, buck up. You've done some amazing things. What are you so sad about? I mean, that's kind of the message from the inbreaking outside of this normal world. This angel shows up to help him feel a little bit better and enjoy his journey of self-discovery. That's the hope in that movie.
Yeah, in fact, George prays, Dear Father in Heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, show me the way. And then he's taken on that journey of self-discovery, not told anything about redemption or that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. But he receives a message of cheery optimism, like, they're there, things aren't so bad after all. Just look around at all the people who love you and depend on you, and so forth. This is the scene in which George first meets his guardian angel, Clarence. George says, well, you look about the kind of angel I'd get, sort of a fallen angel, aren't you? What happened to your wings, Clarence? Well, I haven't won my wings yet. That's why I'm called an angel second class. I have to earn them, and you'll help me, won't you? George Bailey says sarcastically, sure, how? Clarence says, by letting me help you. Every time you hear a bell ring, it means that some angel just got his wings.
That's where that came from.
I know. It's like, that's the famous, oop, an angel got its wings every time you hear a that little bell
There's
ring.
That Pelagianism we were talking about a little bit too earlier on, except now with the angels, you know.
Now the angels are Pelagians.
Working their way to their wings, yeah.
Even the angels have to earn their way to get out of second class.
Yeah. It's amazing.
JV angel.
It's amazing. And you know, the horrible thing is kids are growing up knowing these totally invented movie things. They're getting their theology from these movie classics that their parents watch every year, more catechized in those often than they are in, if you look at the statistics, than they are in the basic plot line of the Bible. Gallup is every year showing that even kids who grew up in the church are more likely to be able to name all of Santa's reindeer than the 12 apostles. So this is really setting up, when we talk about Christmas in America, we're really talking about not just something that doesn't quite get there. We're really talking about, in many ways, something that is a threat, actually, to Christmas.
Yeah, I think insofar as it puts all the focus on us and our effort and, you know, the end of Christmas is that joy or even family. It's kind of funny, we're talking about this movie at the very end, you know, Clarence kind of proclaims the good news to George saying, remember, George, no man is a failure who has friends.
Oh,
so really,
Hallmark moment.
That's right. You're a failure if you're lonely. And the gospel, the good news is if you have family, you get it. You know, if you have that community, that closeness, this is what Christmas is all about. And it's kind of interesting going back to A Christmas Carol. That was the problem with Scrooge. He's this lonely man, this miserly man all by himself. And then so many movies, you think about The Grinch, to name another popular one, where you have this individual who doesn't have people around him, doesn't have family, doesn't have friends. Really, what it's all about is us and having this community. And no man is a failure who has friends, which is interesting. You know, going back to what Whitney said about this being kind of a denial of the gospel, Christ at his most victorious moment was abandoned by all of his friends.
Wow.
Just think of the implications of bad religion. Because at first, that sounds great. Like I'm thinking, okay, this first is engaging despair. This guy's, I mean, there's a lot of people in despair and a lot of reasons we should be in despair if we were to look at only ourselves. And that's a real experience and condition. But then the response is, hey, no one's a failure who has friends. At first, that sentiment kind of is like, yeah, that's nice. But then, you know, every year there are millions of people watching that and hearing that.
It's mean.
That's mean. It is cruel because they are alone. Mm-hmm. And that sentiment, which is really neat for about 3 seconds when you first hear it, comes back around. And even the people who don't physically have people in the room, there's people watching these movies with other people in the room and they feel completely alone and unknown. So it actually kind of rubs their nose in the shame they're already feeling. So we're not just throwing rocks. Just being cranky. It's because the message in this is actually doing harm. Like, it's mean. That's the best way to put it. It's
versus,
just
versus
mean.
The gospel, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
Yeah.
How about The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, 1966, at least the cartoon version, adapted from the 1956 book by Dr. Seuss. And then the feature film that people know now with Jim Carrey from 2000. Here are a few lines that Shane pulled from the script. The Grinch hated Christmas, the whole Christmas season. Please don't ask why. No one quite knows the reason. It could be, perhaps, that his shoes were too tight, or it could be that his head wasn't screwed on just right. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve hating the Whos, staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown at the warm lighted windows below in their town. And so then he decides to steal all the presents in Whoville. Pooh pooh to the Whos, he was grinchily humming. They're finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouths will hang open a minute or two. Then the Whos down in Whoville will all cry boo hoo.
Total depravity is what he's saying here. It's a heart
exactly.
problem.
Exactly. Exactly. Very deep problem he's probing. But then instead of seeing them cry, the Grinch witnesses them holding hands and singing this song. Welcome, Christmas, bring your cheer. Cheer to all Whos far and near. Christmas Day is in our grasp, so long as we have hands to clasp. Christmas Day will always be just as long as we have we. Welcome Christmas while we stand heart to heart and hand in hand. And the Grinch says, but this sound wasn't sad. Why, this sound sounded glad. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing without any presence at all. He hadn't stopped Christmas from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it just came just the same. How could it be so? It came without ribbons, it came without tags, it came without packages, boxes, or bags. He puzzled and puzzled till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And then the true meaning of Christmas came through, and the Grinch found the strength of 10 Grinches plus 2. So what's the meaning of Christmas, according to that one?
Life transformation.
Mm-hmm. And you also see the whole community thing again, right? The Who people are singing, you know, Christmas Day will always be just as long as we have we.
Yeah, and, not Jesus, but we.
And again, I think you guys hit the nail on the head when you were talking about how depressing that can be for some people. So does that mean Christmas is meaningless if I'm lonely or if I don't have people around me, if I don't have family around me? Yeah. That is cruel, I think.
And it's, in a sense, humanitarianism has become a religion here, right? So we find our identity in being kind to another and having each other. And those are all good things in Christ, right?
Yeah. But again, the fruit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But we don't want the root, yeah.
I get a kick out of how much of the Grinch's response is anti-consumerism, you know, creed. It's like, I mean, the whole thing is like tags. They're happy without – so it's like this passive-aggressive anti-consumerism message, which was remade to make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And if there's a place where we do it up, I think a lot of the issues with a lot of the movies we're seeing is both some really bad ideas mixed with some consumerism on steroids put together, because feel-good religion is going to sell a lot better than a wide-open eyed to – the suffering of the world in despair. I mean, that just doesn't sell the gospel. It should, but to proclaim the good news with the gospel comes with the really bad news. That bad news just doesn't sell very well. You're not going to sell a lot of TVs and sneakers and gadgets with that one. Half of his response is just like this awareness that consumerism doesn't fill the void. Something else does. So what are we pitching? Are we pitching life transformation? Are we pitching anti-consumerism? Pitching humanitarianism? Like, what's being pitched? That's what's so revealing about these movies.
Yeah. Christmas will be Christmas as long as we have we, just has a different meaning for kids today. Yeah, as long as you get me a we.
I know we've said this a few times about how mean it is, but when you were talking, Adriel, about Christmas, a friend of our family is mid-60s, and she was never married, doesn't have children, and she said, the loneliest time for me is right after Christmas Eve carols, because everyone goes somewhere else and I go home to be by myself. And she has some good friends who will invite her. But even when she's invited, she said, I appreciate the invitations. And when I go, it just reminds me of what I don't have. And I'm glad to be included. And I know I have brothers and sisters in Christ. And I get that. I mean, she's not complaining about the benefits of the church. She's just saying it hurts. And so these types of things, when I hear these things about as long as we have we and other things, you know, people like that come to mind. Our friends, our family members, people in the churches where we serve, those people come to mind. People are listening and thinking, that's me, or that's someone they know. And it's helpful for them to reflect on this and think, what is the opposite of this mean message that's being sent?
Well, at least with all of this sort of shallow sentimentality, we have Home Alone. 1990, Kevin McAllister is left alone at Christmas. And then he discovers pretty soon that being alone isn't all it's cracked up to be. He wants to be with his family. Here again, the theme of don't want to be alone at Christmas. And here are the lyrics to a song from the movie, somewhere in my memory. Candles in the window, shadows painting the ceiling, gazing at the fire glow, feeling the gingerbread feeling. Precious moments, special people, happy faces I can see. All of the music, all of the magic, all of family home here with me. Is there any predicate in there that makes sense to you?
Well, I'm wondering what a gingerbread feeling is.
You don't know?
I think it's when you feel like you're edible. I don't know.
There's this great scene in that movie. I mean, speaking about family and family being the end of Christmas where, you know, Kevin McAllister's all by himself and his family is desperately trying to get home to him and his mom is trying to get home to him and she's in the airport and she's bargaining with this couple. You know, she's offering them basically everything that she has on her person to try to get home to be with her son on Christmas. And again, it just shows the emphasis in our minds today. It's, you know, okay, if Christmas is not about the consumerism, then it really is about the family. And what wouldn't you give to be with your family on Christmas? And I mean, I think a great truth there, like, you know, we do want to be with family and that's a wonderful thing. But so much of Christmas today is missing the story of the God who gave everything to be with his family.
Yeah, I don't mind if, you know, watching Thursday Before Christmas, we're all sitting around as a family with popcorn and watching a movie. That's fine. It's part of the deal. But one hopes at least they could find a church where they can go and hear what Christmas is really about. But a lot of Christians, I think, just say, no, this is family time. Christmas is family time. Is that kind of playing into this message that that's what Christmas is all about? And are we teaching our kids kind of that is actually what it's all about? The Jesus thing is peripheral. This is what it's all about.
Yes, that message is loud and clear. A lot of people don't like being around their family. That's part of the cruelty also.
Right.
I mean, I'm blessed, love it, love my in-laws, love my parents. We all get along. But that's not necessarily normal. I mean, there's a lot of pain that happens. You start looking at, I'm going dark with you, Mike, on this one, but you start looking at the stats of alcohol abuse, just the things, the ways that people cope being with family and the things that people who go back to their family have to cope with. So this kind of sentimental, like, hey, it's all about family is like, really? Mm-hmm. But that's the best that a sentimental, vacuous religion has to offer, which is pitching life transformation, family is your community, and be nice. The kind of humanitarian, religion.
But that's civil religion. That is the religion of most Americans today.
Yeah, the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. I mean, that's it. There's no cross. There's no kingdom. Just some really good, helpful ethics that will make you nice and make you a good neighbor. That's it.
Yeah, and I think it actually, if we go back to the Christmas Carol, the time of historically Charles Dickens and Victorianism and this idea that morality is you do the right thing, you have a good family, you go to church, you obey the law, and that's where you find what it means to be truly happy. I think that transferred over into America, and that's now basically what we have for Christmas. But it completely trivializes everything. I mean, even think about, well, we talked about the angel Gabriel from It's a Wonderful Life. The fact that there's this angel that appears. Angels are terrifying. Clarence. The angel Clarence.
It doesn't even connect in your mind.
Clarence. Yeah.
Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life, trivializing what an angel actually is.
As if they're like us.
Yeah, exactly. And when we look biblically at what angels are in Luke 2, angel appears to Zechariah and he's terrified. The first thing he says is, don't be afraid. And so angels are trivialized. Families trivialized by elevating it to this high level. It actually trivializes it by saying that, okay, that's the best you're going to get is to be with your family.
Yeah, this pro-family message. You know, if you want to desentimentalize Christmas, just go to the text where Jesus said, I came not to bring peace but a sword to divide families. Everyone who belongs to me is closer to each other than they are to their non-Christian parents and siblings.
Yeah, and I think just in the example you gave earlier of people who don't have family with them, I think these kinds of movies take them to a place where they shouldn't be.
Absolutely.
Like, biblically, the church is your family.
Yeah.
Those are your true brothers and sisters, even more so than your blood family, if your blood family aren't believers.
Yeah.
Home Alone 2 is also another dazzling piece that we might want to explore, Mike.
I think I missed it, so please enlighten me.
So you have Kevin McAllister, and instead of the parents going off to Paris, they are he's in New York, and he has this interesting dialogue with a homeless woman, and it goes like this. She says, did you know that a good deed can erase a bad deed? And Kevin says, it's late. I don't know if I'll have enough time to do enough good deeds to erase all my bad ones.
Wow.
Good news, she says, is that it's Christmas Eve and good deeds count extra tonight.
Just pulling that out of thin air.
It's just random.
The great theologian.
It's like playing a game with kids and they're like, no, you get 10 points for pass and go this time. And you're like, really? Why? Because I'm getting ready to pass go. Okay. It's Christmas Eve. Think of an important thing you can do for others and go do it. Mm. Just follow the star in your heart. So you actually have here some moralism mixed with some Gnostic God in you.
Heartburn, I think. Heartburn. Star in your heart.
Maybe that's a gingerbread feeling.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Wow. So do good deeds, erase bad deeds.
Christ's good deeds do.
Yes.
Right. The right persons.
Not ours.
Yeah. But isn't it amazing how people will turn to the law before they'll turn to the gospel? Just like that, they will say very easily, even at Christmas, really the good news about Christmas is that we're saved by works. I think that that's the best thing about Christmas is that you really get extra points at Christmas for your good deeds.
No one wants to be a charity case.
Mm-hmm.
The message of the gospel is that you are God's charity case. And I think it smacks in the face of our pride that, I mean, we'd rather pick payment over gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people would rather I think they have a default. So I think there's a pride thing, but I also think there's just a default. We mm-hmm. talked about it before, karma. We just kind of go straight back to karma, like, well, I got to figure mm-hmm. this one out. It's up on me. And
the basic anthropology or view of human beings that grounds all this is that your heart is good. Follow your heart. Mm. Everything else may be bad. You may have bad thoughts. You may have bad decisions. You may have done stuff you wish you hadn't. But your heart is sort of that divine thing that's sort of made of star stuff. Follow that and you'll be good.
And the real Christmas story is actually, no, follow another star that's going to lead you to an objective savior, Jesus.
In an actual place called Bethlehem.
Yeah.
This tiny little town in Judea.
And he had to come because our hearts are corrupt.
Yeah, the heart is desperately wicked above everything. That's the thing. We think the deeper we go, the sweeter and cleaner and diviner it is. But Jeremiah says, the heart is desperately wicked above everything else, and who can know it? The Bible kind of rains on our parade when we start talking about following our heart.
Quote Jesus on what comes out of the human heart. Yeah. It's, his list is basically the opposite of the fruit of the Spirit. You have the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians about what does the Spirit grow in you. But the opposite of that that Jesus says is murder, strife, sexual morality, greed, false worship, a whole bunch of horrible things. The violation
that often happen at Christmas especially.
Yeah. The violation of all of his commandments flow naturally out of the human heart. Following the heart is a cruel thing to tell someone, and it's just make believe. It's just empty, vacuous sentimentality.
Mm. So the Star of Bethlehem, as you're saying, Adriel, leads you to a real physical place in history prophesied by the prophets of old, to a real physical human being who is God incarnate, whereas in Home Alone 2 and our culture generally, you've got this star in your heart, this Gnostic unfleshed thing that is leading you to who knows where, whatever basically you want to do.
Subjective guidance. Yeah, I mean, Christmas is really about, should be about redemptive history, what God has done in the incarnation of Jesus Christ. And that's true regardless of where the star in your heart leads you.
You don't get to write this script.
No.
Yeah. Let's go to Miracle on 34th Street. Everybody has seen this one. There's the original version, 1947, and
Mike,
then the remake.
Mike, I've never seen it.
Are you serious?
Never seen? No, I've seen clips of it.
Really?
I've never seen the whole thing through.
Oh,
yeah,
wow. Maybe this Christmas you
feel
can...
I feel like a failure now.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine how much of a loss you must feel.
I'm a bad human.
Yeah. 1994 was the more recent release. Little girl discovers dreams do come true if you just really believe. Six-year-old Susan had already been told the truth about Santa Claus. But after meeting a special department store Santa who's convinced that he's the real thing, she becomes convinced too. So she's given the most precious gift of all, something finally to believe in. Is something to believe in the most precious gift of all?
No. What this is doing is actually turning faith, which is trust, into the emphasis on the verb, just the having of it, just trusting, believing in
faith
something.
Faith itself becomes the object, not the instrument.
The act of having faith is the big deal. It's not in what you have faith or on what the faith is grounded upon.
It's fill in the blank.
It's just this is the subjective turn of culture. And the reason I know about this one is I wrote an article a while ago on faith and pop culture. The shift in the past few years about faith has turned it from being a noun and to the having of it. Doesn't matter where it's pointed, as long as you're having faith in something. It could be yourself, it could be someone else, it could be a sentiment, it could be a feeling. But it's what gives you a sense of meaning and hope and purpose. Whatever it is.
You gotta have faith.
You gotta have one. And that was the main one, is you gotta have faith, from George Michael and Limp Bizkit, the remake. But that's the turn of the shift on how just the term of faith has been misused and co-opted.
A character named Alfred complains in the movie, yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around in this world, but one of the worst is commercialism. Don't care what Christmas stands for, just make a buck. But Kris Kringle, the real Santa, enters the picture and begins to challenge the way people think about Christmas for those who believe in him. He says, Christmas isn't just a day, it's a frame of mind. For the past 50 years or so, I've been getting more and more worried about Christmas. Seems we're all so busy trying to beat the other fellow and making things go faster and look shinier and cost less, that Christmas and I are sort of getting lost in the shuffle. Wow. Okay, so Jesus got lost in the shuffle a long time ago. Now Santa, in 1946, is already worried about him losing his central place in Christmas.
He sees how powerful consumerism or commercialism is.
It can even unseat Santa.
It's interesting that he's identifying the commercialism as a problem here, just like the Grinch was, you know, earlier, like you were saying, Justin. But the solution that they give every single time is also part of the problem insofar mm-hmm. as they view that solution as the end, the ultimate solution, whether it's family or, you know, jolly attitudes, moral reform, whatever it is.
A frame of mind.
A frame of mind, yeah.
And I mean, I would say Christmas should be a frame of mind in the sense of the true biblical message of Christmas,
yeah.
But not in the way that he's meeting it here in this movie.
Which is ironically how you got Santa in the first place, because St. Nicholas was not inventing Christmas. He would have laughed to see what has been done, or cried, to his reputation. He was a bishop, as far as we know, in Turkey, who was giving toys to orphans. Why? Because he was a Christian, and he believed that Christians who have been given so much have much to give to others. And so as the fruit of his Christian faith, his faith in Christ, he became enormously successful as a giver of gifts. And he would do so when they weren't looking. He would leave toys where they couldn't spot him. And so now, ironically, he becomes the center of Christmas when his whole point was making Christ the center of what he was doing. We have turned even those servants, as it were, of Christmas into the centers and totally created a mythology around it.
Yeah, and at one point in the movie, Kris Kringle says, "I'm not just a whimsical figure who wears a charming suit. I'm a symbol of the human ability to suppress the selfish and hateful tendencies that rule the major part of our lives."
Hi, my name is Pelagius. I'm a British monk, and I have come to... Wow.
Here's what's really neat about what's happening, or not neat in a good way, but kind of fascinating to pay attention to, is that faith has become a commodity. We're talking about consumerism, and when that happens, faith becomes tailored to the consumer's needs, and it becomes a matter of personal interest and conviction and how they feel subjectively. But this gives us a really good moment to kind of look at Acts 17 and go, you know what? Our culture is very deeply religious and spiritual, and very religious in the sense of Acts 17:22. And so the key isn't only to criticize. We need to look at it and criticize it, but say this is actually mean and not helpful and not good, but winsomely and clearly point to the one, which is what we've been doing. But this comes like just a moment to freeze frame and say, what in the world's happening right here? And this is what I do when I watch TV, and my dad did this when I was a kid. He'd be like, pause, let's talk. What's going on right here?
Yeah,
it's really
that's
helpful.
That's great.
And what this
we're not
is
saying don't watch these movies. We're saying, no, these could be great catechetical moments.
Wonderful. I mean, yeah. So I'm imagining listeners going, okay, well, yeah, wait a second. Okay, that's really – but to read this line, I mean, this is shocking. Like, Whitney, when you say this, I'm thinking, wait, for real? Someone actually wrote this down? I'm the symbol of the human ability to be able to suppress the selfish and hateful tendencies that rule the major parts of our lives. If you can't believe, if you can't accept anything on faith, then you're doomed for a life dominated by doubt. I mean, that's just horrible news. And so we get to say, hey, in very many ways, you are very religious. You are dominated by these hateful tendencies, and you can't even get free. You're in bondage, and you need freedom.
One of the recurring themes in all of these movies that we're talking about is that if you believe enough, no matter what the object of faith is, well, I mean, there's sometimes you believe in family, you believe in friends, you believe in your heart and follow your heart. You believe in sentimentality, basically. If you believe enough, then it's real. You make it real by believing in it. That's certainly in Miracle on 34th Street. That is certainly clear there, where believing in Santa Claus is what makes him real to you. It's like he's only real to people who believe in him. And there's this great scene where Kris Kringle's defense attorney says, "Your Honor, if this court finds that Mr. Kringle is not who he says he is, that there is no Santa, I ask the court to judge which is worse, a lie that draws a smile or a truth that draws a tear." And folks, what's really striking here is that this, especially at this time of the year, how far we will go to dismiss the historical, verifiable account of Jesus, who was born while Quirinius was governor of Syria under Caesar Augustus, nailing this to specific times and places. We will say no to the historical Jesus, but we will be totally credulous when it comes to believing almost anything and everything, and imagining that it would be better to believe in someone who brought a smile to your face than to say that Santa isn't real. How different is that from what Paul says? Look, no, here's the deal. If Jesus wasn't raised bodily, then we are of all men the most to be pitied, for we have been wrong about God. We've been wrong about the truth. We've given our whole lives to a lie. We have lied. That doesn't bring a smile. That is bad religion. And if Christ isn't raised, then there really is no reason for us to break a smile over anything that surrounds his birth.
The defense attorney set up the question in a way that we don't even have to say an answer to it, because it's either it's the lie that draws a smile or the truth that draws a tear. Well, Paul is saying if it's a lie, it draws the tear. If it's true, it draws the smile. So we get to tinker. The gospel tinkers with this question and unravels it and says, no, I'm not giving an answer to that. Those aren't the only two options. You can actually have the truth bringing the smile and the lie brings. And that's what lies do. The lie of a false religion and despair brings despair. I mean, we despair in ourselves. We should despair in ourselves. And there's no health in us. The world is red in tooth and claw. And what we need is rescue and hope, and we need a lot more. The truth does bring the smile, and the equation is not set up by Kris Kringle's defense attorney well.
And in contrast to a lot of the movies we've seen, don't you think the one exception here that really stands out is Charlie Brown Christmas? Now, Charles Schulz was a professing Christian. I love the way that one ends, because it's like no one can tell this better than Luke the Evangelist. What is Christmas about? I mean, that's the climax of the movie, is what is Christmas really about? And they read Luke 2.
In the way that he sets it up, I mean, listen to this, Charlie Brown. This is in 1965, so this is some of the movies we've talked about at the same time. "I think there may be something wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming, but I'm not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. I don't understand Christmas. I like getting presents and sending Christmas cards and decorating trees and all that, but I'm still not happy. I always end up feeling depressed." I mean, that's the opposite message you've been getting the entire time of these other movies. Linus says, "Charlie Brown, you're the only person I know that can take a wonderful season like Christmas and turn it into a problem. Maybe Lucy's right. Of all the Charlie Browns in the world, you're the Charlie Browniest." And Charlie says, "Actually, Lucy, my trouble is Christmas. I just don't understand it. Instead of feeling happy, I feel sort of let down." And then Lucy says, "You need involvement. You'll need to get involved in some real Christmas project.
Wow.
How would you like to be the director of our Christmas play?"
They're all saying the things about Christmas that all these other movies have been saying.
Do something and you'll feel better.
Charlie's basically just saying, "Do you have a word? I don't want an exhortation. Do you have a word that will save me?" I mean, people keep on saying, "Get involved.
We've got good works for you."
Yeah. And then things go wrong, and Charlie continues to spiral into his depression. And then it ends with the following scene, the climactic scene. Charlie Brown says, "Everything I do turns into a disaster. I guess I really don't know what Christmas is all about. Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?" And Linus says, "Sure, Charlie Brown, I can tell you what Christmas is all about." And they were there in the same country, shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. "And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, which is the point where Linus drops his security blanket. For behold, I bring unto you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men.
It's a great note for us to end on. The real story, folks, is so much better and deeper and richer than all the false stories. It's all we can call them. All of the false stories and the false religion posing under the name of Christmas. Look forward to being with you again next time. It's White Horse Inn. Thanks for tuning in.
The White Horse Inn is a listener-supported broadcast. For more information about this program, visit us online at whitehorseinn.org. If you sign up as an innkeeper, architect, or reformer, not only will you get a complimentary subscription to our magazine, Modern Reformation, but you'll also get longer editions of every White Horse Inn broadcast. To find out how to join one of these support programs, click on the support tab of our website, whitehorseinn.org. You can also give us a call at 1-800-890-7556. That's 1-800-890-7556. We'll see you next time at the White Horse Inn.